We're going to dig right in this morning. If you want to join me, you can turn to Luke chapter 15. And we're continuing in our series entitled, what's just called 4D, Four Dimensions. And if you were not here last week, here's the synopsis of where we started. Last week was the prequel. And the idea was that God is higher than we are. And so we looked at Genesis 1 and John 1, and we looked at the complexity of God, that God is a tri-unity. He is more complicated than we are, and he's higher than we are. And then because he is higher than us, what Isaiah the prophet says makes absolute sense. Actually, God says to Isaiah, my ways are higher than yours, and my thoughts are higher than yours. And then there's this invitation that God gives us to join him in that which is higher. Okay, so he's always calling us up. He's calling us into more. And so discipleship, or like the following of Jesus, is a joining of him in moving from the lesser to the greater, from the lower to the higher. And he longs for us to join him in that, right? And so we're going to look at four different components that we believe the Lord is inviting us into that will call us higher if we join him and follow in. And this morning is the first D, or the first dimension of that which God calls us into, this higher living. And this morning, we're going to talk about the gospel. The gospel is the foundation of everything that God is inviting us into, and it builds from there, but it is the absolute epicenter. It's like the foundation stone upon which everything else is built. And then this morning we're going to take a look at the gospel through a story that Jesus told in Luke chapter 15. So I'm going to start reading in verse 11, and we're just going to tear this thing apart and see if we can get our minds and our hearts around what the gospel, literally the word means good news, what the good news is and why it's good news to us. Okay, Luke 15, starting in verse 11, Jesus is storytelling. And he's telling us things that we need to understand about him and his kingdom and why he has come. And there's a crowd of people that are around listening to him, right? He's not in the recording booth by himself. He is in a crowd of people, and they are listening to him tell a live story, actually a series of stories. But here we go in verse 11. And Jesus said, there was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he, the father, divided his property between the two sons. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. Okay. I've got five kids. The youngest son that I have is he's in a developmental phase where he's starting to recognize good guys and bad guys. Good people, bad people. And here's how we've seen this play out. Here's how I know that he's in that phase. Anytime we're in the car and we are driving through a municipality, a city that one of his other siblings has competed against in basketball or track or cross country, what my youngest son likes to do is roll the windows down and yell, boo, 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 right? He, I don't know, he just recognizes that his siblings are good. They're on a particular team. These other people from this other city tried to beat his brothers and sisters in sport. And so he is just going to publicly shame them and let them know that they're the bad guys. Boo, boo. And so it's embarrassing for us as a family to drive and to have him booing publicly and shaming whole cities as we drive through. But it's a phase. And if it's not a phase, I blame his mom. And it's probably something that she's doing to ruin him. Anyway, that's the developmental phase that he's in. He recognizes good characters, bad characters, good people, bad people. So right out of the gate, I want us to recognize that there's one way that we would hear this story through our 2024 Western American lens. We would hear this story through our particular lens, and it might speak some things of value to us. Actually, I think it would. I think it would speak some deep things of value to us. But if we really want to understand the story that Jesus is laying down, we have to understand it through the lens of the people whom Jesus is speaking to now. We want to hear Jesus' story through their ears so that we can hear it properly now and understand how to move and flow with the story. So the original hearers, as Jesus is right out of the gate with this story, they've recognized who the bad character is in this story. And it's the younger son. And right now, everyone who's listening to Jesus is regarding the younger son, the character who the spotlight is on. All the people who are listening to Jesus are saying, boo, boo, boo. They don't like him. They want to publicly shame him. They know whichever way this story goes, this younger son is the bad guy, right? So my son and all of the original hearers would be booing this guy. Here's why they would be booing him. Three reasons, at least probably more. Reason number one why he's the bad guy is because he greatly dishonored his father. Culturally speaking, and it's actually quasi-similar in our culture, we typically don't receive an inheritance in our culture, but for sure in the first century, you don't receive an inheritance until your parents or whoever the inheritance is coming from has passed away. And so this son, his father, is greatly wealthy, and he asks for his inheritance while his father is still living, okay? This is not a mild diss. This is a through the front door, like wrecking of his father's identity and value. Essentially what he's saying is, Dad, I really don't care about you. I just want your stuff. I can't wait for you to die any longer. I've been waiting a long time. I wish you would just die. But since you won't, let's just go ahead and do the transaction now so I can take your stuff and then I can go to a faraway country and be away from you, right? Deeply dishonoring of his father. In this culture, like, that's a no-no. So right out of the gate, he dishonored his father and the people are saying to that, boo, boo. Next thing is this. All of these people that Jesus is speaking to, they're under what they would call the tyrannical rule of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was vast and wide in its geographic sphere, and everywhere the Romans went, they established their rule of law, their ways, and every place they ruled, they extracted vast amounts of wealth out of that place to fuel the empire and its expansion and life in Rome, right? So that all the higher-ups can have a life of plush easiness that is founded upon those out there who were working for their benefit. So the Hebrew people here, the Israelites, are paying vast amounts of money in taxes, and money is hard to come by for them. There are many poor people who are struggling to make ends meet. And Jesus is telling a story about a younger son who gets a vast sum of wealth. We don't know the number, but we know it's a lot. It's like it's millions, it's maybe tens of millions, we don't know, but it's a lot of money. And then in the story, they hear that this younger son takes all of this money. These people are struggling just to get dinner on get food on the dinner plate tonight, right? And this guy takes all of this wealth, and Jesus says he just squanders it. He wastes it in reckless and wild living. And for the poor who are struggling to make ends meet, to this character they would say, boo, boo, how dare you be so wasteful? All right, so he dishonored his father, he's wasting resources, and the last thing is this, he's just straight up living in sin, right? The Judeo-Christian worldview is a worldview that is predicated upon thousands of years of God and revealing his ways of living to the world. Okay, Jesus is just now on the scene, but he's speaking to the Judeo people who have a rich Old Testament history. The law that God handed down was full of ethical behaviors that these people respected. Whether or not they lived in them was another matter, but they had deep respect for the good law that God had handed down. And so they're generally moral people. And so they hear this story of this younger son doing all of these dishonorable and nasty things and living in a life of sin as he's doing these other things, right? These people would say to him, boo, boo. Like, everything about this guy is bad news. We know there's good guys and there's bad guys. In this story, the younger son is a bad guy. And everybody is saying, boo, thumbs down. Not just my son, all of the hearers. Okay, then in verse 14, Jesus continues the story. And when he, the younger son, had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and he hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he, the younger son, was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. Okay, remember out of the gate, last week we talked about this, that God invites us from the lower to the higher. He is higher, his ways are higher, his invitation is always up. The trajectory of this younger son is the exact opposite of that. He was birthed and bestowed in this world because of no choice of his own, a birthright, an inheritance, a family, a position. He was high. And every decision that he makes is calling him and drawing him and necessitating that he moves lower. And the destination that he finally gets to is he finds himself in a pigsty. Okay? He's born into privilege in a fantastic family with an awesome father, and now he finds himself in a pigsty. Nasty, filthy piggies and all the things that piggies do all around him, right? It's a trajectory from higher to lower. But again, let's think about this through the lens of the original hearers. The original hearers are Jewish people, and they have 1,500 years of Old Testament history, at least. And in that history, here's one of the things that God made very clear to his people. There's clean things and there's unclean things. Some of the clean and unclean stuff is actually due to health and prosperity and cleanliness and all that kind of stuff. Some of it is just arbitrary because God is trying to distinguish his people from the world. But regardless, pigs are on the unclean list. Think about it. For 1,500 years, you have lived in a culture with a people for whom pigs are dirty, nasty, unclean. You keep your distance between you and them. For sure you don't eat them, and you don't hang out in the sty near them. Okay? So this is the epicenter of a nasty, low place where this guy, this younger son, has ended up. In the pigsty means he has gone lower. As low as you can possibly get, that's where this younger son and his decision-making train has taken him. And all the original hearers, right, as they hear that now he's in the pigsty, they say, boo, boo, right? It just keeps getting worse for them, the hearers of the story, regarding their perception of this young man. In verse 17, but when he, the younger son, came to himself, an idea pops into his brain. He said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will then arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and he went to his father. Okay, verse 17 is very clear. The younger son's motivation for leaving the pigsty is he's hungry. He just... wants some food. It says, right, we already read this, that he was longing to eat the piggy food, and the person that hired him said, no, I don't want to waste any of my pig food on you. I will just pay you minimally, no pig food for you. So he's just deeply hungry, and so his motivation to go home is to meet his own hunger needs. His motivation to go home, and everybody who's listening to the story catches this, his motivation to go home is not, Dad, I am sorry. Man, did I mess up. What an idiot I have been. Dad, I missed you. I didn't realize how good you were and how much you loved me and how awesome life here was. Forgive me. I am sorry. My bad, right? Something in that genre would be better as motivation to go home than I am hungry. And so everybody listening to the story says, to this, right? You're going home just for food? Boo! Boo! Like you! This guy just keeps getting worse as a character for everyone who's listening to the story. Now, here we go. The younger son comes home. And here's what all of the original hearers would love to see happen, right? If you've ever listened to a good story, or if you've watched a good movie, it like scoots you up to the edge of your seat and you lean forward, right? A good narrator will draw you in and like lead you to the place the storyteller wants you to go. So everybody that's listening to the story now is anticipating that the father is home. And he's got his old school cane right here in his hands. And then like they just know, because they know, we know where a good story goes. They just know as soon as the son walks in or onto the property, and he's got his whole spiel here to get back in with dad to get some food. But, right, the original hearers know, dad's not going to fall for that mess. Dad's not a fool. Dad's going to take care of business, and what we're going to do is we're going to get an old school caning going on here, right? So here's how the story is supposed to finish. The son comes home, the dad says, oh, it's you. And then the father grabs one of these guys, and this is the son, and then this is what happens. And everybody says, yes! Boo! Yeah, it's going down! I like this story. This is how this story is supposed to end. And then his dad kicks him out. He's all bloodied and he's mangled and he looks like a train wreck of a person and he leaves. That's how this story is supposed to end. But the scandal is that Jesus doesn't take it there. Here's where Jesus takes the story. Second half of verse 20. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, here's the spiel. Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm hungry. No, he didn't say that. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Verse 22. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And everyone is scratching their heads. And they're starting to get real mad. This is what the father does. First thing he says, bring the robe. Bring the robe. The best robe. Imagine what the son was wearing. He was wearing tattered rags. He had no money for food. That for sure means he doesn't have money for new clothes. So he scrapes his way back and his clothes are probably near falling off. And they still got the piggy filth smell on them because he's been hanging out in the pigsty. His brother just doesn't look good. And the father says, bring and put over top of him the best robe and cloak him in it. Boy, the great history of this is Genesis 3. When Adam and Eve have sinned, they ran into a far country, metaphorically speaking, and then the father shows up on the scene, and instead of grabbing the cane and beating the tar out of them, what he does is he offers a sacrifice. An animal lays its life down. The father brings the knife down, and then that animal and the shed blood out of that animal then becomes skins that the Lord himself weaves into a covering that is a suitable covering to cover the nakedness of Adam and Eve. And so the Old Testament prophets would call this something like the royal robe of righteousness. Then the father covers his son completely. And then he says, bring the ring. In the ancient world, this would have been very clear. It's called a signet ring. Signature ring. Just reading with my kids last night when Darius put Daniel in the lion's den and he sealed it with his signet ring. It's his signature. He is putting his authority in and saying, "This I authorize as the king, it shall be done." In the same way, the father has a signature. He's the leader of the family. He's the patriarch. He's the owner of all of the wealth. He's the guy that's got clout and status. Everybody likes him and reveres him. And he's got a signature that is his ring. And he says, "Bring my signature ring and put it on my son's hand, so that whatever he needs, he just signs for it. It's on me." Right? So the son wants to come back as a servant. And the father makes it very clear, no, you're not coming back as a servant. You're coming back as a son. I give you my name. I give you my authority. I give you my identity. You are now walking in a full restoration of your identity. Your position, your name, your identity has been restored. And then the last thing he says, and put shoes on his feet. Because in this restoration of identity, the son's going to need something on his feet to move about freely in this new identity. In the first century, in Roman context, slaves oftentimes regularly did not wear shoes. And you could tell who a slave was because they didn't have shoes. Some slaves, if their work necessitated it, they would wear shoes for their work. But shoes communicated things of social status and hierarchy. His son is coming back from the pigsty. He's not wearing Jordans. You can tell this guy's on hard times. Just look at him. And so the father says, bring the shoes. Nice ones. Everyone now will know that he's been restored. And he will have fluid movement in these shoes, in this new identity of restoration that I'm giving him. Everyone that's hearing this story is scandalized. They can't believe that Jesus is telling this story, and they're perplexed why he would be telling this story. Here's why Jesus is telling this story. Because he's giving us a glimpse into the heart of the Father, into the mission for which Jesus came. And it essentially is this, that God does not give us the bad that we deserve. The caning that should have happened, it doesn't happen for the Son. And the Father does give us the good that we do not deserve. The royal robe, the signet ring, and the shoes. This younger son has spent everything. He's got nothing left. Everything that's provided to him is from the Father. The gospel is scandalous. And all of the hearers that Jesus is telling this story to would see this as an offensive and scandalous story until the moment when they recognize that they are the younger son. That they're the ones who wandered off away from the Father, ruined and wrecked the God-given identity that he placed upon us. We walked in the land of sin. We dishonored our Father with our thoughts and our attitudes and our actions. That we are the ones who Jesus is speaking of when he talks about the younger son. And then, once we recognize that this younger son isn't a bad character out there, but it's me and it's you. And then when we realize, oh wow, what Jesus is saying is this is how our Father in heaven treats us. That's when the gospel story goes from being scandalous to becoming the best news ever. And then the father continues. Verse 23. And the father's not done. He says, "And bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they, all y'all, everybody, began to celebrate. So the party happens. And it's a big party. I don't know if you've ever thrown a party before. Sometimes you grab a couple hamburgers, some hot dogs, maybe some chicken if you're feeling dangerous, right? But this is a cow. The cow gets slaughtered, and that means like everybody's invited. And if everybody doesn't come, we're going to have some spoiling food here over the next couple of days. Everybody is coming to celebrate because this is a party of massive proportions. Because the father's pumped. He doesn't want anybody to miss out on the celebration. And here's what the party is. The party is our covering in Jesus. Jesus has become our royal robe of righteousness. His death, his life and his death and his resurrection have become our covering. And here's the party. Our identity as sons and daughters has been restored. The signet ring is ours. We are his. And that's our identity. It's bestowed upon us. We did nothing to earn it. It's just gifted and granted. And here's the party. Our invitation to move and to flow in this family, the family of the Father, in this world that is the Father's world, that is the shoes. Here's the point. We who have chosen to believe the scandal of the gospel, that this could be true of us, that this is how God treats us, this is how he sees us, that's the party. And this party doesn't have an end time. The Father doesn't ever say, hey guys, it's 11:30 at night, it's time for everybody to go home. That's not that kind of party. This is the kind of party that the Father initiates and it just keeps going. Meaning that the younger son is, like the story here is not that the younger son wakes up tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock and he's got this like chore list to do that's like a mile long. He's never going to get to it. Like party's over. Now it's time to get to work. No, the party is what we are in as we believe the good news that this is how God treats us. And so just to be clear, the younger son does nothing to earn or merit any of this. He's already squandered everything. He's got nothing to his name. But there is a cost that is borne for all of the things that are happening now. The caning that the son did not receive, that's a cost. It's just the son doesn't bear that. That cost is going to go somewhere else. The royal robe, the signet ring, the shoes, the restoration into this new life, all the things that the son now walks in, there's a cost associated with that. It's just the son's not going to bear that cost. Someone else, the father's going to bear that cost. And so right now, here's what we're going to do. We are going to celebrate the God who bore all of that cost for us, the scandal of the good news, the gospel of Jesus. So band, come on back up. What we're going to do over the next few songs is we're going to move out of our seats. We're going to do communion this morning. And we're not bringing it to you. You're going to come to it. And we're just going to ask you to exit out the sides, whatever side you're on, and then just kind of come down the front and then take the cup and then take the bread and then take it just back to your seats. And at some point, as we're singing, just us as a family, this is a family feast, but just whenever you're ready, as we sing, just take it on your own. And what we're doing right now is we are celebrating that the cost was borne on the shoulders of someone else. That's the scandal of the good news. That Jesus takes that all upon himself so that we could be covered with the royal robe, so that we could have the identity restored with the ring on our finger, so that we would have the shoes placed on our feet to navigate freely in this new world. We also have our gluten-free option here in the smaller container for those of you who are gluten-free.
Same thing happened to me last month when I saw like the real bread. It was like a real breaking. It's a real cost. We say that the good news is free. Oh, it's not free. It's free to us. It wasn't free. Deep cost. The deep cost comes out of a deep love. And the party that we live in is a party filled with deep love. So, let's celebrate the scandal of a loving father. Who between he and his son and the Spirit of God bore a great cost. On the shoulders of the son, but oh, the father and the spirit were feeling it too. So that we could live in the party, back in the family. I'm going to pray, we're going to start singing, and we're all going to start moving. Father in heaven, thank you that you are different. You tell us that you're higher. Sometimes it's really hard for us to believe. We like to pull you lower. We don't believe that we could be forgiven. We don't believe that we could be received by you. We don't believe that your love actually is effectual. But Father, help us to follow you into the higher, to join you in the place where we receive your love, your grace, your goodness, your kindness. Let us be the people who live in the party that you are throwing now. We receive it. Thank you for loving us so well and so faithfully and so constantly. Forgive us for wandering. Thank you for drawing us home and welcoming us in the party all the time in Jesus. So, Father, now we pray that you would be honored. We're sorry for dishonoring you. We pray now that you would be honored as we celebrate your goodness and your kindness and your love, your grace. And it's the name of your newly reclaimed sons and daughters of yours. We are pleased to bear the image in the name of Jesus and to receive all that you have for us that lifts us higher. We receive the good news in Jesus' name. Amen.